folks. You're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman. We're here in Charlottesville in the beautiful studios of the Charlottesville Radio Group with the world's greatest producer, Mike Biseglia. And, folks, you've found the podcast where we have raw conversation with chefs and other food personalities. We hope that you'll love it. We hope that you'll find that this is a scintillating interview tonight, that you will get to the heart of the person that we're talking to. We're very excited, by the way, to have a person who I think took the Shenandoah Valley by surprise when he went there. And I've always known that the Shenandoah Valley has some of the richest soil in the world, and that it's one of the most lush and fertile places, and that you know, the first chef that lands there who really knows what he's doing could do good things. And Chef Ian Bowden from the Stanton Grocery, he came there from New York. I put his stamp on farm to fork food, and really, you know, probably I think this guy is almost like a pioneer. And if you know anything about Stanton, Virginia, it's really a cool place, up and coming, and so many other people have joined in. And I think that's what happens when someone goes in and does something good. So anyway, Ian, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me on tonight. I've been hearing about you for years now.
Yeah, it's all.
I finally talked to you.
It's all lies. but you know,
I
after
say that, Melissa always says nice things about you.
Well, after you know, after being in the kitchen for 38 years, for you know, 70, 80 hours a week, you. Yeah, it's I don't know if you're still sane or, but I
think it takes some insanity to get here in the first place.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I think so too. So you know, I'm talking about Stanton, Virginia, and I did some research when I was at Cornell University, and I wanted to move south closer to my grandchildren, and I was looking in the Pennsylvania Dutch country, but also in that same valley swath. And I found an article from the 1920s or 1930s that claimed that the soil in that valley heading up through Lebanon Valley and into the Dutch country was the second most fertile soil in the entire world. What do you think about that?
It shows in the product. You know, we support a ton of local family farms here, and you know, the product that I get here, I'll put it against anything I ever bought in New York. Hands down, that's one of the things that landed me here. I saw a lot of resources that weren't being tapped, and a lot of farmers that were kind of doing it as a hobby that wanted to do it professionally. And I like to think that we helped get them there. So yeah, I would agree with that 100%. The product we get here is phenomenal, phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I've only heard good things, and I remember when you first came down and people were eating there, and they were saying, "Man, you have got to get to Stanton. This is really great food," and I love the name. I always, when I hear a restaurant that has a name that I think clicks and makes me feel good, I always get mad because I can never think of them. So how did you actually go in an old grocery store? Or?
Well, you know, there's a couple of reasons for it. The first two locations I looked at in Stanton both were actually at one point grocery stores. One of them was the central depot area, I guess you'd say, for for produce in the valley. Which is up by the train tracks in Stanton, and then the second place I looked at was actually a regular grocery store for a number of years, and my parents' friends actually had done some research on the building and found pictures of it as a grocery, so I thought that was pretty cool. The store we're in that we ended up going into was a bakery at one point, it was a hotel at one point, but never a grocery store. But for me, I guess there's a couple reasons for it. One being, you know, portraying the freshness of the ingredients. You know, the grocery store back in the day was not just somewhere where it wasn't a catch-all. You know, you went to get groceries, you know, food products.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, for me, it kind of implies the freshness of the product, which is a big thing for me. The side thing for it, which is kind of funny, is that it sticks with people. You know, you go to a restaurant called The Grocery, you hear that for the first time, and it sticks with you. I can't tell you how many people have called and asked us if we carry specific products, and
yeah,
we've had
to
tell them that I'm sorry, but we're actually a restaurant, not a grocery store. So I think the name just stuck with people.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Put Stan in there. I'm sorry.
I think you're right, because I am. You know, when I heard the name of your restaurant first, it really did kind of bring up kind of Now, I don't mean this romantically, but there's kind of a feeling I have as a child and being in Ocean City and having these grocery trucks come to my grandparents' place they had and sell all this produce and, you know, everything fresh. Well, and that's exactly what I thought.
It's totally cool to romanticize it because that's what it should be. I mean, dining at a restaurant is about romance. You know, the food should romance you. The atmosphere should romance you. So there's no shame in romancing it at all.
Okay,
romanticizing it at all.
Well, then I'm coming out. I felt romanticized. it's exactly how I felt by hearing the name of the restaurant, and you know, I like that, and I always hope that you know I can come up with that. So let's go back now because we know this is a great place. We're going to come back to it, but actually, where did you actually grow up?
I grew up in Northern Virginia. I was born in Loudoun County Hospital. And I grew up in Northern Virginia. And of course I ran away as quickly as I possibly could, but, Northern Virginia is where I got my start cooking.
Yeah.
I apprenticed for a master French chef. I started when I was 13 working with him, making salads and getting smacked around and yelled at in French all the time.
Yeah. No, that was, how do you say Fusilier? Was that Chef Mark
Fusilier?
Where was his restaurant?
It's on, Route 28. Right before you hit Manassas.
Right. So you were up there and you just went in there as a dishwasher? Or did you?
My parents dined there a couple times, and my folks were always about us, me and my brother, I have an older brother. They were always about us trying things and trying to figure out what we wanted in the long run. They were big advocates of, you know, actually being passionate and enjoying what you do. So they wanted us to try as many things as we possibly could. And, you know, they had been to this restaurant a couple times, and they came home one night and said, "Hey, how would you like to go hang out in the kitchen?" I said, "Sure, why not?" So the chef, you know, they went and talked to the chef, Chef Mark, and said, you know, "We have a young son who'd like to see what it's like to be in a kitchen. Can he come on a slow night where he won't get in the way?" And he said, "Absolutely not. He has to come on a Friday or Saturday night and be in the middle of it." And and I never left.
Yeah, you fell in love with it right away, huh?
I did. You know, it's the same thing's probably drew me to kitchen work as many of us. You know, it's fast. There's sharp things. There's fire. You know, implied danger. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting, especially when the kitchen's humming. There's nothing like the adrenaline rush you get from a busy kitchen.
True.
So I guess I got addicted right away. And there goes the rest of my life.
Yeah. So once you were in there and you got addicted, did you feel it? You know, you felt it. You're like, "Look, this is what I want to do." Or were you still thinking?
I can't remember a time at this point where I didn't think this is what I wanted to do. You know, I really think that the first day I walked in the kitchen was pretty much it for me.
Wow, that's awesome. And did you live close by to this place?
Yeah, we lived in Clifton,
which is
probably 15 minutes,
sure.
10 minutes away from the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And my parents used to drop me off after school on Fridays and come pick me up, you know, at 11 o'clock at night until I got my driver's license. Every Friday, Saturday, they did that. And then I started driving myself and working more. I actually went to work study in high school so I could spend more time at the restaurant and less time in school, which I was a horrible student.
Join the club.
They're in culinary school too.
that's awesome. So did Chef Mark? What kind of was he? You know, you said he was a maitre cuisinier.
Yeah.
So he was a master chef of France, right?
Yeah.
And
at the time, I think there was 30 in the United States, and he was one of them.
And so he probably ran a pretty tight kitchen.
Back, I think I probably run a tighter kitchen. He was a lot more aggressive, though. You know, I mean, he was French, and you know, French chefs have the reputation of being yellers and screamers.
Sure.
But not only was he from France, he was from Brittany.
Oh, good.
And the Bretons have few reputation. He was also a drill sergeant in the French Marines, so you know.
Oh, awesome!
He kicked my butt quite a bit. I can still feel his hand slapping the back of my head every time I do something stupid.
Well, that's awesome. Well, did he, you know, when you were in there, you didn't, you know, that was, I guess that was part of the adrenaline ride, huh? Getting yelled at or hit or trying not to.
Times have changed. unfortunately, kitchens don't run quite like that. Not that I'm a pro abusing your staff. but, you know, a heavy hand and some screaming every once in a while isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, I will admit that I have hit people before, but I've been healed.
I go out of my way not to, and yeah, I go out of my way never to attack somebody personally. It's always what they've done wrong that I attack, not the person. Like, I won't call someone an idiot. You know, I'll say, why'd you do something so stupid? You know, but I'll never call them stupid.
Yeah, but I think the French, they didn't know any other word. I think they just thought idiot meant, because I've been called this by the French chef before, too. You know, he's like, idiot! But I think everybody should go through that. It should be a rite of passage for the kitchen.
I agree 100%. I mean, you know, well, what they're doing in the process is instilling a pride in what you do. And once again, I'm not that old, but it makes me sound old. You know, there's something that my generation and the generations after me have totally and completely lost, which is pride in their work. You know, when you show up for work, you're there to work. You get paid to do a job. You should do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get mad if you get reprimanded for not doing a job properly. You know?
Well, you know what I told my wife when she was asking me? She said, well, you know, why do you yell at those guys and throw things at them? And I said, because they want me to. They're there. They expect it. So, I do it for them. And then she didn't believe me. So, look, you working for Chef Mark, and then then you got out of...
Sorry, man. I got to tell you this real quick. Yeah. When I was working in New York at Judson Grill with Bill Telepan, Bill Telepan's an infamous hothead. I love him to death. You know, he taught me a ton, but he's an infamous hothead. And there was one night in particular where he was going off on us really bad in the middle of service. And one of the tables, a woman at one of the tables, because we had an open kitchen, so the whole dining room could hear him screaming. And one of the women at one of the tables said to the waiter, can you please tell the chef to stop screaming at the cooks? He's making us uncomfortable.
That's awesome.
They killed me.
How did he take it?
His wife used to come into the restaurant and yell at him for yelling at us as well.
Yeah, that happens. So you left. That's a pretty neat thing, though, for kids. Now, I've had many parents do the same thing with me. In fact, I actually have one right now at the barbecue. But, you know, so but it doesn't always work out that way. But when it does work out, you know, I'm sure these chefs that you worked for when you were young probably feel pretty proud. Or are you still in contact with them and everything?
I still stay in touch with Bill. Most of my other chefs, I don't. I really learned and came into the farm to fork thing through Bill. Bill was a huge advocate of farm to table cooking, and still is. He's really involved in New York City's public school system right now. I feel like I have a special connection with him. It's actually funny, when we first opened the restaurant, he had opened his restaurant Telepan in New York a year before we opened, almost to the day.
Right.
And he sent me an email. He's like, what the fuck, Ian? He said, I Googled my name the other day and you keep on popping up. but he really instilled that in me.
Yeah,
so sure. I think I have a special connection with him as far as chefs I've worked with in the past. But as far as other ones, no. I mean, Chef Mark passed away when I was in New York. And I honestly didn't keep good enough contact with him. I'm not great at staying in touch with people. So it's probably my fault. But
well, so you went to, you left Northern Virginia, went straight to the New England Culinary. Did you do that young, or did you work for a few years?
Well, I went to NECI. I think I just turned 18
when
I left for NECI. I left high school early. I actually went to night school to get my last 3 credits and didn't go to classes. Went to DC instead and hung out and had a meeting with the principal because I got accepted to culinary school early. The new principal of the night school was, a progressive thinker.
Oh,
I guess.
Good.
And,
yeah.
She decided to give me credit for all of my work experience so I could graduate from high school and leave to go to culinary school early. So I was,
that's
at
awesome.
The time, I was one of the 2 youngest students that the culinary school had accepted.
Yeah, that must have been an eye-opener. I was 18 when I went to chef school.
I had a big head, man. I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
I had a good amount of experience under my belt. I could have gotten a lot more out of culinary school. I was a little too cocky and young, I think, to be there, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, it's funny. We have a lot in common because I was extremely cocky when I went to chef school. But I was lucky enough to have one French chef who decided to put me in my place as I was showing off, and he threw all of my stuff on the floor, all of my cutting board, my knives, all my stuff, screamed and yelled at me, and you know, after that I was fine, and I really needed it. So, but
I think what did it for me was going to New York. I mean, that was the biggest eye opener,
right?
Because in culinary school, when I went, it was, you know, I guess 2 years after I started cooking, Time magazine had Wolfgang Puck on the cover saying, mm-hmm. you know, the new rock stars, you know, chefs.
Right.
And I was looking at going, huh? And you know, so there was a lot of second career people, a lot of older people in their 30s and 40s actually going to my culinary school at the time.
Right.
Because it was just this new big phenomena. And so I really didn't have that experience. I didn't think I was cocky, but obviously looking back, I know I was. You know, there was a lot of people there with no cooking experience at all.
Right.
So I didn't really get put in my place. The instructors liked me because I could cook.
Right.
But New York was the big eye opener, big time.
So you left from Necky and went straight to Paillard.
Actually, I went to. For my first internship at Necky, there's two 6-month internships. So my first home, and it's when Prince Michel Vineyards had the restaurant there.
I remember.
I worked for Chef Alain Lecomte, who is actually a Master French Chef now as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was the youngest Master French Chef, I believe.
Where is he these days?
He's got a restaurant now in Richmond called Chez Max.
Okay. Because I remember eating his food. I was at Clifton Inn at the time. And we'd go up to Prince Michel and eat. It was always really good.
He was awesome. You know, his food was great. And that was an eye-opener for me, too. I mean, him and, well, not so much him, but his sous chef at the time beat me, like physically, mentally, emotionally. He tore me up. I think he was from Basque Country.
Well, you were an intern, so.
Yeah, of course. So now I do the same thing to my intern, you know?
Well, you want to make sure they can make it.
You possibly can. You pay them as little as possible, and if they get paid at all, and they're supposed to say thank you, chef.
That's right. Yes, chef. Thank you, chef. Can I have another?
That's something that's gone the way of the birds as well. You know, I mean, the whole yes, chef thing. If I hear yeah from one of my cooks again, I'm gonna punch them.
Yeah. True enough. True enough. Well, I'll come over. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not punching anyone.
You can take care of them for me.
Yeah, true enough. So you spent all this time. How long were you in New York City, by the way?
I was in New York for 10 years.
And that was,
and that, know, that was more than enough.
Isn't that like, I mean, New York City is like the center of the world.
Yeah, you just don't realize it when you're there. Everything is just so chaotic, and there's people all the time. There's no escape from anything. Part of the reason I left.
Yeah, I get it just from going to visit and going to eat places. I just like can't believe it. There's so much energy there and everything. I'm just, you know, it's just unbelievable. I couldn't imagine living there and having to find a place to live or, you know, commute into town or whatever it took to go there on a daily basis. Probably make me more tired than working.
I was talking to my friend, a friend of mine, Charlie, who's a chef in the city as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to him the other day, and he's like, you know, he's like, he grew up in New York. He's like, I've had enough. He's like, if this last restaurant, he just got a new chef's job. I guess he's been there for 9 months. And he's like, you know what? If things don't pan out this time, he's like, I'm out of here. He's like, I'm moving upstate. I'm going to open a small spot and relax. I was like, yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
But you told him, saying, you know, you can open a small place, but you're not necessarily going to relax.
Well, yeah, there's that. I joke about that all the time. Yeah, I moved to Stanton so I could slow down.
Well, it's a different kind of work,
right?
Yeah. Well, I think what you get in Stanton is you know you don't have to fight to get to work and fight to get home. You know, it's a nicer drive. How close do you live actually to the grocery?
Well, me and my wife got married about 2 years ago. We were living at her house, which was a 3-minute drive.
Uh-huh.
Probably a mile and a half, and I guess 6 or 7 months ago, we bought a new home in foreclosure right downtown.
So
we got a
killer
deal on an amazing, beautiful home, and it takes me 5 minutes to walk to work in the morning.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I don't have to stand on the subway, you know, under someone's armpit for 45 minutes anymore, which is kind of nice.
45 minutes you took to get to work?
Well, yeah, I lived in Harlem, and my last chef's job in New York was in the West Village. So I had to take two trains or take one train and walk for 20 minutes or so.
Wow.
So, and it was, and you know, as a chef, I was at work. Well, I usually go to the Green Market first on my way in. So, you know, I'd have to be in on the train in rush during rush hour. It was a drag.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
rush hour there is not an hour, not even close.
And you have some good air. You have some good air in Stanton, right? Good air. You don't smell diesel that often, do you?
No. it's nice. No sirens. I don't have to deal with gunshots anymore. You know, all kinds of stuff. It's nice. It's nice and quiet.
So, let me ask you, what you went in the kitchen, you felt at home right away. You decided, bam, this is it for me. But do you think there's any special attributes that you have, maybe they came from your childhood, or maybe you don't even know, that made you a better chef? And then I'm going to follow that up with the next question, which is, do you think that some people actually have something that's kind of ingrained in their soul that makes them better as a chef?
Yes and yes. My family's always been very food-oriented. Uh-huh. The kitchen was always our communal place. Anytime we had family over, or guests or friends or whatever, a party, everyone always hung out in the kitchen. My mom was a great cook, but she very rarely cooked. My dad cooked most of the time. And he'd get bored with cooking when he knew how to cook, so he learned how to make pizza. And that was a big thing in our house for a while. And my parents were into wine and good food. Birthday presents for me when I was a kid, especially once I started to get really interested in food, was going out to a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get toys or video games or anything like that. We went out to dinner. That played a big role. Also, my grandparents were all big cooks. They were all immigrants, mostly from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually funny. The first time I had to write my own menu, not for my restaurant, but for my first chef's job.
Sure.
I executed the whole menu and I stepped back and started rereading it. And I was like, well, where did this come from? And childhood memories came up. It was really kind of neat and surreal. And answer the second question, most definitely. I think there's some people that are just more inclined to kitchen work. Not just the hours, but the kitchen mentality in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I think most of the people that do fit into kitchens don't fit in most other places. we're known for for being kind of outside of the law slightly. Not that I ever broke the law.
No, I know what you're saying.
We're a different breed of person. I think anybody can learn how to cook. I think it takes a special person to not only to be a chef, but to excel in the kitchen. I really do. We also have to define that make a big differentiation between a cook and a chef, and what it takes to be the two of those things. Because I think it takes different skill sets.
Yeah, that's true. Real quick, do you a lot of people listen to this that are like up and coming. They might be an intern or an extern. What do you think are the special attributes that's needed to be a chef or
versus a cook?
Yeah. Well, versus a cook, since you were saying cook versus chef, what kind of attribute do you think it takes for someone to excel?
As a chef, I hate to admit it, man, but it's, 90% management. It's a lot less cooking than it is management. And learning how to deal with individuals and individual personalities, learning how to manage situations instead of people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to think on your toes is another huge one.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being a cook where all you're worried about is the food that's in front of you and what your prep list is that day.
Right.
As you get better as a cook, you definitely start to get a better kitchen view, meaning, you can see the whole kitchen while you're working on your station.
Right.
As a chef, you don't have an excuse not to have a kitchen view. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to, catch that one plate that's across the room that has a thumbprint on it. That just goes without saying. I had another great example of that is working at Paillard, which originally in New York, which was originally part owned or part invested. One of the big investors was Danielle Blue, because Francois Paillard and Philippe Bertino, the chefs at Paillard, were both worked with Danielle for several years beforehand.
Sure.
And I went and ate dinner at Danielle with my folks when they came into town to visit. And I went into the kitchen to say hello to Danielle, and we're walking through the kitchen, and literally, it must have been 15 yards on the other side of the kitchen. You know, Danielle looked out of the corner of his eyes, went over to somebody standing halfway across the kitchen, bawled them out for I don't know what, but it had something to do with a plate they were putting in the window, and they came back to me and say, okay, let's go. And so we went out to the dining room. And yeah. You have to have that kind of vision, you know?
True.
If you don't, you can't run a successful kitchen. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you,
and your standards are everything.
Yeah. Are you a the type of chef that also controls the dining room?
You know what? I have been. I try not to be now.
Yeah.
You know, I have a great general manager, wine director, Christopher Croxton, who just actually passed his first year of his Master Sommelier classes.
That's awesome.
You know, he does a great job. He's great with the staff. I pretty much let him do what he feels is right. I trust him.
Mm-hmm.
If I see something I don't like, I make sure to point it out to him. You know, obviously, I mean, how food is presented is very important to me. But as far as how it gets to the table, I let him deal with that.
Yeah.
Well, and I've had to been, at my last job in New York, I had to be responsible for everything. There was no front of the house manager. So I did have to do everything. And you know what? Adding the owner aspect to the job is, it gets to be a bit much. So I'd rather hire somebody I trust and let them run with it.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Especially if you can find someone in that particular job that loves what they're doing and has the same, can understand your vision. You know, because I think that's another thing that, you know, a chef has to have some kind of an idea from the beginning to the end of what he wants in his restaurant.
Yes, and oh my God, that's such a big issue with new restaurateurs. Who, you know, I have people coming to me all the time. I'm going to open this restaurant. What do you think? I'm like, okay, well, what's your concept? Well, something like this and like that and like this.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, what's your concept? You know, you got to start with that concept when you're writing the menus, when you're building out the space. So you've got to have a clear line of sight from inception to execution. Otherwise, you have a failing restaurant.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time. I'm sure you do, too. I mean,
I saw it
in New York 100 times. I've seen it in Stanton a couple times already. You know, it's ridiculous. It's like, you know, instead of blowing all your money on yourself, why don't you give it to me and let me try to make some money for you?
Yeah, true enough. You know, I see in our area some, you know, if you take Tomas Rahal, you know, with Mas Tapas and places like that that have a clear, I mean, it's clear what they are and who they want to be, and it mm-hmm. just fits, and it's nice, and the vision is you know, something that you can tell, you know, if mm-hmm. if you're looking for it. Now, you know, most diners just go out to eat,
right?
And they're just happy, and they don't really know why they're happy, but
they don't need to know. They don't need to think about it.
If they're upset,
you know?
They know why.
Their job yeah. is to come in and enjoy.
That's right.
Our job is to make sure they do enjoy, and this is how we make sure that happens. Yeah.
True enough. So you, you're married, any children in the future or anything?
I've got two stepkids.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that works good. How old are they?
11 and 14, Lucian and Lila. Lucian's 14. He just started high school this year, and Lila's 11. She just started junior high this year.
Yeah. How often do you cook at home?
Since we moved into the new house, not very often. I want to build out my kitchen first.
Mm-hmm.
There's no workspace yet.
Yeah.
You know, at the old house, I cooked pretty often. I cook almost every day off.
Nice.
You know, there's something, you know, I think it goes back to my family roots and mm-hmm. why I got into cooking in the first place, and cooking for people that you love and care about.
Sure.
You know, it's a totally different experience than cooking for paying guests. Not that I don't care about my guests.
Right.
But it's just different.
It is true. You know, I always tried to tell my cooks that, you know, sometimes the greatest meals came from like your mother, your grandmother, whoever, because they didn't cook like from some kind of ego. They just loved you so much that they cooked all day,
right.
You know, and I think, you know, I think if anybody can feel that in their heart and become a chef and try to cook that way, it's going to come out good, you know?
I agree. That's actually, you know, something I used to tell my cooks in New York all the time. In New York, most of the line cooks are from Central South America. You know,
sure.
So I know machismo is a big thing. They're all mm-hmm. mothers. They're all mama's boys. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
So I would get into their face and say, "Would you give that to your mother? No, chef. And why are you giving it to my guests? Okay, Chef. You know, and that was something I threw out all the time. I still do it every once in a while with my staff now.
Yeah, true, true. I like that. We ought to get there with a video camera. And I've been told by people who worked with you that you're very detail-oriented. How does that enter into your day, your detail-orientisms?
You know, it's funny because half my life is totally completely scattered. I used to joke about it all the time. It's not so funny anymore. But, yeah, I used to say, you know, in the kitchen I'm meticulous and the neatest, cleanest person in the world. And as soon as I get home, my house is a wreck. Which isn't the case anymore because I'm married with kids. When I was a bachelor, my apartments were always tore up.
Yeah.
But my kitchen was spotless.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that goes back to the apprenticeship and training, you know, and the abuse and, you know, making sure that everything was cleaned up and carefully taken care of so you didn't get yelled at.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, true.
It was fear-driven.
Yeah, I think the, you know, those formulative days when you're a chef have everything to do with, you know, how you're going to end up. What would you say for anybody who's up and coming, they want to be a chef, you know, what kind of advice you give them today?
Eyes open.
Yeah, there you go.
Pay attention. Pay attention to everything that's happening in the kitchen. Make sure you get your job done. If you're allowed to, come in early every day because all the cool stuff happens when you're not there.
Yeah, true.
You know, get your prep done early. Stand next to your chef. Just stand there. Your sous chef or chef, whoever will let you set up. You know, when you get there in the morning to set up your cutting boards and pull out your knives, set up next to your chef, set up next to your sous chef, and pay attention to everything they do. Everything. You learn more from watching than in a professional kitchen. You'll learn more in the long run from watching than you do from doing, because you're going to get the menial bullshit tasks.
True.
All the cool stuff everybody else is doing. And pay attention.
That's good advice. That's really good advice. You know what? I wish I could go back, actually, start over. Actually, I don't. I'm tired. You know? But
you know,
no, that's great advice. You know?
I would have kept my eyes just a little bit more open and you know, took things to heart just a little bit more, you know, I would have gotten a lot more out of it. I mean, you know, you're friends with Melissa. I mean, she worked for you.
Yeah, sure.
And she got 10 times more out of culinary school than I did. And it's because she was a little bit older and, you know, she had her eyes wide open. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't at all.
Yeah. And I mean, there were some good chefs up there at NECI. I mean, there still are. And, you know, it's funny. I'm a Culinary Institute kid and you know, the two schools are the same, but different. And, you know, I've had people from both schools. And you know what it is? It's always like you say, it doesn't really matter. It's the person who went to that school and what they put into it and what's in their heart, more than it is the school. In fact, I've had good people from schools that I think aren't really that great. I'm not going to name the names of the schools, but I've had people who are just stellar, and it's the person, you know, and what they have in their heart. Who would you say was your biggest? You may have already told us with Bill, right? But would you say he was your biggest influence?
Bill was definitely a huge influence. But Chef Mark was the one who developed the heart for me. You know, he you know, outside of the kitchen, he treated me like I was his son because he didn't have a son.
Mm-hmm.
In the kitchen, you know, I was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
which is the way I've seen most chefs act. You know, when I in New York, when I'd run into my old chefs at the Green Market, you know, I was their best friend. You know, in the kitchen, you know, I was lucky if they said anything to me. And actually, in a French kitchen, it's, you know you're doing a good job if no one's talking to you.
Yeah, true. No.
If you're getting talked to, there's obviously a problem.
Yeah.
So, but every chef I've worked with and for has definitely influenced me. You know, my last chef's job was at home restaurant in New York. And before I came here, and David Page, who's, you know, not very well liked and in the culinary community,
right.
But very well respected. You know, he put me through hell, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And I left on bad terms, and I'm upset that I left on bad terms because it's the only job I've ever left on bad terms. But I learned a lot from him too, and he really helped me develop my palate,
right.
In a big way. Yeah, so he was a huge influence on me too. I mean, I can't say that there's anybody I worked for or with that didn't influence me. Even my cooks, all my cooks influenced me on a daily basis. I think that goes back into that chef category. Being able to take in all the information from everybody around you and learn from everybody is really important.
But you're still keeping your eyes open.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I read constantly. Unfortunately, I still watch the Food Network every once in a while.
Me too.
But there's something to be learned everywhere, from chefs you respect and chefs you don't respect. All gamuts, all walks of life. Like, there's always something you can learn about food from people. One of my pipe dreams is writing a cookbook, cooking with grandmothers, in the Shenandoah Valley.
Because
I feel like in Virginia, we have a food history, and we have a connection to food, but it's not very well documented.
True enough.
The only chef that I know from Virginia who wrote books that's actually gotten some acclaim was Edna Lewis,
right?
Who is an idol of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But other than her, there's really not much food documentation in this region. One of my pipe dreams is finding everybody's grandmother or great grandmother if they're still alive,
mm-hmm.
and doing a side by side book with them. So, they do the old school recipe, and then I do a modern interpretation of that same recipe. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I think it'd be great, but don't call it a pipe dream. It can still happen. I tried to write.
I need a couple more hours in the day.
Well, I got to tell you, I always heard, when they used to say when we were a kid, writing is a discipline, and I used to think that was crap. And then I started writing articles for the Ithaca Journal. When I was up at Cornell, and I would do these Monday articles, and writing those things was worse than doing sit-ups and push-ups. And I'm like, God darn it, this is true. And because you don't want to sound stupid, and especially if you're in an Ivy League town, you don't want to put this. They read it, and they're like, God, this guy's an idiot. So and I felt the pressure, and I'm like, this is hard.
I was writing, I was doing some blogs for Virginia Living Magazine, I guess I did 8 or 9 blogs for them.
Sure.
I just got swamped in the kitchen. I couldn't keep up anymore. And they wanted one a week from me, with photographs. And it was just too much.
Right.
So I started a book, and then I stopped, and then I started, and then I stopped. And, I'd like to pick it back up and run with it. But it's a lot of time.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of time. And then, what scares me the most is writing down recipes. I've never been a big recipe writer.
Yeah. Trust me, I've been.
Standardized recipes, man, I taste it. Does it taste right? Okay, then it's right.
Yeah.
So that stuff kind of scares me.
Writing
a book and having to have 100 recipes in it and testing each one and then having somebody else in a home kitchen test each
true
one.
Enough.
It's crazy.
I think most chefs, though, they don't test theirs, because I've had people come to me, look, I have this cookbook, mm-hmm. and I cook these recipes, nothing turns out,
But, yeah, no, I think that's changed a little bit with the food craze, but I agree. I mean, there's some big name chefs that I won't mention that whenever I use cookbooks for inspiration, just like most chefs do. So I'll find a recipe that I like or an idea that I like, and then I'll execute it the way it is in the book, and then I will tweak it to fit my style and my palate, and then, throw the whole thing away and start over again. But there's been many occasions where I followed a recipe out of a cookbook, and I was like, they had no tester on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true enough. So that brings me to another question. So right now, are you always thinking food? Like, you go home, you're laying in bed, you're taking a shower, whatever. Are you always, is it just there on the tip of your tongue?
And unfortunately, my wife's going to listen to this interview, and she's going to smack me when she hears that part. But yes, I'm always thinking about food.
Well, you tell her to call my wife. They can have fun talking. But
have
I'm sure she
I'm
sure she loves you for that. What is there a website?
Yeah.
Mad Chef Wives.
About it too. It's a... myhusband's a chef.com. So I think that's what it is.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Myhusband's a chef.com.
Chef wives, complaining about their husbands.
Oh, God. I hope she doesn't find that one. But it is true. I mean, I have talked to some chefs. They're like, no, I turn it off or whatever. Where do you get your inspiration? Nowhere. I just think of it during the day, which I think is a bunch of crap,
I don't believe that.
I mean,
I don't believe that for a second, man.
Where have your best ideas come from? I mean, do you remember any place? Have you ever dreamed something and woke up and said, holy shit, I got to do that?
All the time. A lot of stuff on the menu comes from my dreams. I'll wake up in the middle of the night, or I'll be, flipping through channels and I'll see something and it'll spark a memory and then, dishes just develop. A lot of my stuff does happen on the fly because of the way we write the menus and because of the amount of local product we get in. A lot of it has to happen off the cuff. But it's probably 50-50. I'd say 50% of the menu is, me developing a concept, and 50% of it is, wow, this is amazing tomatoes. What can I do to it? Or what can I not do to it to make it stand out? It's probably 50-50.
You allow the ingredient 50%. You allow the ingredients to inspire you, and the other 50, you're just thinking about food and things just come up in your head.
I've got a file on my computer full of ideas, and it's just an open Word document, with nothing in it, with just a heading. And, I take the heading, and as I have time, I develop the idea. And then once the idea is somewhat sound, I'll start testing elements of the dish and then pull it all together. So I've got notes like that all over the place. On my phone, I've got a sticky pad app. My smartphone.
Yeah, nice.
That's got ideas all over it. I've got notebooks and pieces of paper all over my office. I've got sticky notes all over the office. I mean, it's ridiculous. I've got sticky notes in cookbooks. I mean, you name it, I've got it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how about the counter to that? Have you come up with a great idea, tried it out, and it was crap?
Oh, yeah. That happens. You can't succeed without failing. It happens all the time. One of the things I try to instill in my cooks is, fail forward. And it's something my dad beat me over the head with growing up. If you make a mistake, figure out where it went wrong or why it didn't work and take something from it. I don't care if you throw something away because it didn't come out right, but don't throw it away and then throw the idea away. You gotta take something out of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. How about anything else?
I really encourage my cooks to try to be creative as well. I think part of our jobs as a chef is, another big chunk of our job is teaching. And part of teaching in the culinary world is teaching people how to be creative and teaching them how to develop a concept and an idea, how to develop a recipe, and it's really cool the first time a cook comes to you with an idea that ends up on the menu and you have them help you along the whole process. It's really cool to see how invested they end up being and how excited they get.
True enough.
That's a big part of our job as well.
Yeah, I think that's great that you allow them to, to have input like that. Are you the kind of chef then that allows them every day just to come in and talk to you about their thoughts and what they're thinking with food?
I encourage them to. I encourage them to because, I get just as much from those conversations as they do. Mm-hmm. They can come to me with an idea and from that idea, I could get something that's totally, completely different, but it develops into a concept and then a dish. Someone comes and say, I want to make a panna cotta. And I'm like, okay. And they go off on this tangent, and then it turns into me where I, make some kind of flan. Mm-hmm. It's the same but different, and it comes from a totally different direction. They're coming in sweet, and I come out savory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I think I get just as much out of it as they do.
That's awesome. What else would you like people to know about Ian Bowden?
That's a tough question.
Are you one-dimensional guy? Food, and more food?
No, not even. Not even.
Do you have another?
I've become less dynamic as I get older, honestly. Food is a big chunk of my life, but my family is more important to me than anything.
Right.
My wife and my stepkids are the be-all, end-all for me.
Yeah.
And honestly, those are the two things I do. I spend time with my family, and I work. Whatever happens while I'm at work, stays at work for the most part.
Yeah, right.
And when I'm with my family, it's all about them.
Awesome.
It's like my wife used to get mad at me because we'd have a day off together, and she's like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I'd be like, "I don't care. I don't want to make any more decisions. I have to make 500 of them every day." So whatever you want to do is cool. She still gets mad at me about it occasionally, but it's just the way I feel. When I'm with them, they're what matters.
Yeah. So you could pretty much be doing anything, and it would be cool, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. As long as I'm with them, I don't care.
Yeah, true. You ought to bring them to Gordonsville, have some barbecue.
Yeah, totally, totally.
They'd love the drive.
We're looking for good barbecue, man. I haven't made it out there yet.
Yeah, well, we have fun. But, well, look, I think this has been a great interview, and that people who listen can get a lot of really good points, understand that you're passionate about what you do, and, you know, you're passionate about the, you know, supporting your local farmers as well as, you know, your local community, as well as putting down some food that you want people to like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's cool, and I think they'll think that too. So I sure appreciate you being on with me tonight.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, I'm going to get over there, I think, probably in the next few weeks, because I'm really hungry for your food. So we'll be, you'll be looking for my wife and I in the next couple of weeks. She deserves it. So we'll be over.
Definitely let me know you're coming by.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. And folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat. Again, it's the podcast where you hear the real thing, the raw interviews with chefs, find out what makes them tick, who they really are. And listen, sound out on our blog, chewfat.net. Sound out on over there at the wonderful charlottesvillepodcast.com, right? charlottesvillepodcast.com, is that right? Seville Podcast. You know, I get this. I'm really good at this, aren't I?
Enough, man.
Close enough. All right, folks, over and out. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this came out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."